happens when you hike into a deep, dark wilderness looking for some of the most haunted places in the country? Andrea Lankford is about to tell you and how to get there here on Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, but thousands of people visit us on the web each day, and you can experience paranormal pictures, video and audio clips, news, and a discussion board by visiting speakingofstrange.com and clicking the link to Lemur Paranormal Investigations. You can also check out our sponsors like Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria and the Haunted Asheville Ghost Store designed by me. So remember to tune in each Saturday night at 8 p.m. and help us keep your Saturday nights special by visiting speakingofstrange.com. And now, if you want to see a ghost, I mean really, truly want to see a chilling apparition, you sometimes have to do things that most people would never do, like fill a backpack, get your walking stick, and go deep into the woods, perhaps at night, on foot, to an undisturbed place where something awful may have happened. And if you hike to these places, even camp, you're going to be pretty much stuck there if the stuff starts hitting the fan in the middle of the night, unless you want to run off into bear country or maybe stumble and dive off a cliff. So making your way deep into the woods on foot to an infamous site of murder can be dangerous. Well, none of that has stopped Andrea Lankford, who used to be a ranger for the National Park Service. She has traveled from sea to shining sea in this country, personally investigating these places, and now she has compiled them in an impressive book with maps called Haunted Hikes, Spine-Tingling Tales and Trails from North America's National Parks. She even has Brown Mountain, site of the eerie Brown Mountain Lights on there, with a pic from Brian Irish's lemur footage. Her website is hauntedhiker.com. Andrea Lankford, welcome to the program.
Hi, Joshua.
It's so good to have you here because, you know, when I saw your book, I said, wow, this is a great idea. This is going to be a big seller, and you've done a fine job of ensuring its quality. So let's just start with the basics. Please tell us where you're from, where you are, and your description of what you do.
Well, I'm originally from Tennessee. I got a degree in forestry from the University of Tennessee, but now I live in California. I was a park ranger for 12 years, and I worked at Cape Hatteras on the shore of North Carolina there, Zion, Yosemite, Grand Canyon, several places.
And so when you use the term haunted, how do you define that term?
Well, to me, haunted, you know, I'm not sure I believe in ghosts yet. I'm pretty skeptical. I haven't seen one myself. But I do believe that when bad stuff happens, and certainly a lot of bad stuff has happened in national parks, that something can be left on the landscape. So whether it's in our unconscious that we share or some mark on the land, that there's definitely haunted spots in national parks.
Now, did you have any experiences growing up that sort of led to your interest in the unknown, or how did that develop?
I really, you know, as a Southerner, the stories are often told of supernatural and unexplained events, so I do have that background. But as a park ranger, I think where my seed of this book developed was at Zion National Park, where there was one canyon, hidden canyon, and just a lot of bad stuff seemed to happen there. And the other rangers, we began to get the idea that this place was cursed. And through my other experiences as a ranger, I began to learn that places where bad things happen often had a history behind them. Often it might be a Native American curse or legend associated with that area. And that's where I really began to get interested in investigating more into those type of activities.
So how exactly did you proceed with creating this book, Haunted Hikes?
Well, I kind of had a two-prong approach. I went through a lot of historical documents to try to get legends and stories and historical documented facts that have occurred even prior to when the national parks were created. But I also used a lot of my contacts with the National Park Service, a lot of people that I know and respect had told me stories and experienced things that they can't explain. And when park rangers, they aren't prone to superstition. So when a park ranger I know tells me they've seen a strange light hovering over a grave, you know, that unsettles me a little.
Yeah, I can see why. Yeah. Well, now, when you were doing the research, did you use any paranormal research equipment, so to speak?
No, I did mostly historical research and interviews. I did travel to several places, some before I wrote the book and some while I was writing the book. I did visit a lot of these places myself. But I'm more interested in documenting what other people have experienced. My own experiences tend to be about what the landscape looks like and what the feel of the place is, and that's what I try to describe for hikers when they decide to visit this place for themselves.
So what do you advise people who visit these places equip themselves with?
Well, I do have a little section in my book, kind of dependent on your religious preference. You know, if you're a Native American, you might burn sage incense to protect yourself. Wiccans like to burn a purple candle. Of course, if you're going to burn anything, do it at home, not in the national park. The last thing you want to do is start a forest fire. You know, an organic way is to use powdered angelica root that you could sprinkle around your tent or in your boots. Personally, myself, I bring mosquito repellent and a flask of whiskey. So
I like the flask of whiskey
part.
Yeah,
that'll pretty much cure whatever might ail you. But, you know, a lot of these hikes, you said you have to travel way back in the backcountry. It's true. For some of them, you do. But a lot of these hikes are actually wheelchair accessible, too. There are paved paths where handicapped or older people or people who aren't that fit can visit some of these places.
Now, have you ever been afraid of running into a killer out there in the national forest turning you into the next ghost?
Well, that's the question. You know, I hiked the Appalachian Trail from Georgia to Maine in 1999, and that is a question that a lot of people asked me while I was doing that. And I guess I just trusted in my ability and my instinct to ward off an attack. I do believe that hiking is just as safe as going to the mall or driving to work, if not more safe. So there are risks involved, but, you know, I believe that for the most part you're safe out there.
And you cannot ordinarily carry a firearm in national parks, right?
No, I would not recommend to do that. That is against the law, and firearms are pretty heavy.
Yeah.
So, you know, you might be better off with bear spray, because that not only would that work against the bear, but it would also work against the human that intended harm to you.
Well, what if the wind's blowing toward you?
Well, I've had that happen before. It's not a good experience, so you want to watch out. You definitely want to be having the wind at your back if you do that.
That's a good tip, then, because I guess there are, you know, certain times when, you know, we know that even though it's rare, the bear attacks do occur. I've heard all these different stories, by the way, about how to deal with the bear. You know, some people say you should just lay down in a ball and curl up. Do you agree with that?
Depends on the bear. If you're in Yellowstone and it's a grizzly bear, that is a very good idea, is to not be threatening and not to run. Mm-hmm. But black bears, they have a little bit different personality. You know, banging rocks, banging pans, looking large, that might work for you against a black bear there in the Smokies where you live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I usually, when I'm hiking, I, you know, clap my hands or something every few minutes.
Yeah,
and so,
absolutely.
Yeah. All right, well, let's start with your experiences at Brown Mountain and then sort of work our way around the country. What happened to you here in western North Carolina that is included in your book, Haunted Hikes?
Well, I did work as a wilderness ranger for the Forest Service there in Linville Falls, Linville Gorge area. The area is near you that are in my book, the Blue Ridge Parkway. You've got the Brown Mountain Lights that you can see, not only there from the Forest Service, but there from the parkway at Beacon Heights. Also, the Blue Ridge Parkway, actually, when you move up into Virginia, you have a place called Scare Rock on the Appalachian Trail where an unseen, invisible monster of some sort jumped on the back of a cruel slave owner's horse, and the next day the man and his horse were found dead. Also in North Carolina, you know, at Cape Hatteras, you have Blackbeard's ghost who's been seen in Springer Point and swimming around headless at Teach's Hole. From there, you could go all the way out here to California, where I live now, at Channel Islands, where a handless Chinese man is still searching for his hand on Santa Cruz Island, up to Alaska and Hawaii. There's just lots of stories. 50 national parks are in my book, and over 100 trails that you can hike that have a story associated with them.
So did you actually see the Brown Mountain Lights yourself?
I have not seen the Brown Mountain Lights. I have been there to the Overlook, and I just wasn't lucky enough. I think I'm going to have to come, you know, in October and spend some more time watching them, but watching for them. But I personally have not seen them.
Yeah, and so now when you, I guess you came to Western North Carolina looking for the Brown Mountain Lights, right?
No, I was there when I worked there. When I wrote the chapter for the book, I was here in California, and I did my research from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not go there looking for the lights when I wrote that chapter.
So what would you say is the most haunted place in your book?
Probably Mammoth Cave. Is the most haunted national park maybe in the world. A lot of very chilling stories come out of Mammoth Cave.
And where is that?
That is in Kentucky.
Right. Okay. And what is one that stands out in your mind?
I think one of the chilling things about the Mammoth Cave is a lot of park rangers experience these things. You know, they have park guides that give tours down in the cave. And every once in a while, they'll do something they call blackouts, where they're leading a group, and they'll shut off the electric lights and flashlights so that people can experience complete darkness or light from an old-fashioned lantern. And when rangers do these blackouts, they've experienced a lot of strange things. They've been pushed. They've seen what looks like black slave guides in the group, and then when they turn the lights on, those slave guides are gone, or at least people dressed in period clothing. And there used to be black slave guides that guided people in the cave before it was a national park, obviously. So it's a creepy place, Mammoth Cave. That is one of the places I have not been to yet, although I did talk to rangers who work there when I did the research for my book.
Mm-hmm.
I might try to go there this summer.
Sure. I mean, you have so many places here, it's obviously impossible to visit them all. And it's time for our first break. And when we return from this break, we will talk about more places of interest that Andrea Lankford has written about in her book Haunted Hikes, as well as maybe some warnings that she might give to readers of this book. You can go to hauntedhiker.com to learn more. There is also a link at speakingofstrange.com. I'm Joshua P. Warren. And it comes usual. Speaking of Strange.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar. If I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire.
Andrea Lankford is her name, joining us here on Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. Her new book is called Haunted Hikes, Spine-Tingling Tales and Trails from North America's National Parks. She should know, since she used to be a National Park Ranger. And this is a fantastic book. It's really comprehensive, and I was surprised when I got it. It also includes maps that show you how to get there. And before we get to more conversation about the paranormal, out of curiosity, you know, in the last segment, Andrea, we were talking about bears, and so many of us have seen this, you know, Grizzly Man special on Discovery, where this guy was literally going out there and petting wild bears and ended up getting eaten, I look at him and I say, this guy deserved it. You know, I was really happy when he got eaten in the documentary. And I'm wondering, from a forest ranger's perspective, do you guys look at this dude and say, this is just an idiot and he deserved to be eaten? Or, I mean, what's the mentality amongst rangers?
Well, you know, I know some rangers that were working up there at the time, and, you know, I probably can't fully speak for them, but I do think that their feelings would be similar to mine. I mean, that guy was a train wreck, you know, on the way, watching him. I watched the video, and it's just like he was headed for trouble. You know, wildlife, they're not what you see in the cartoon. You know, they don't love us. They are out there to survive, and they have a harsh environment that they have to survive in. So, you know, it's tooth and claw there.
Yeah, yeah, sure enough. Well, now, before we continue with some of these locations that you covered, what warnings do you give to readers of Haunted Hikes?
Well, you know, probably the park that scares me the most is the Grand Canyon. I was a ranger there for 5 years, and I worked there during one of the deadliest summers. There are legends that there are beings and gods that live in that canyon that, you know, are not too forgiving of people who enter a park that aren't spiritually prepared. So, you know, I advise that I call it doing your homework. You study the place that you're going, you read the park brochures and the safety warnings. You know, you take it kind of seriously like an expedition, and you want to have all the safety equipment and food and water that you need before you do your hike.
Sure. Well, now, a very nice job has been done in your book, Haunted Hikes, of breaking down regions. And I'm just going to throw out some regions and, you know, see what comes to you, to the forefront of your mind. Let's just start with California and Hawaii.
Well, Hawaii is a fun one because of the Pele curse. You know, like, yeah, you've probably heard of people who just can't resist going and visiting the volcano and finding the little solid lava rocks that have cooled and taking some of these things home. Well, for many, many years, people who have taken these things home have had experienced very bad luck, you know, from broken marriages to dead pets. It's not a curse to be taken lightly. So that's kind of one to watch out for in Hawaii, volcanoes in that region.
Okay. How about desert southwest?
Well, let's see. You know, at Mesa Verde, there's an interesting story in my book about the Anasazi, and there's been a lot of controversy among archaeologists about cannibals in the region. And as you know, 800 years ago, when the Anasazi left that area, and there is pretty much hard evidence that at least on one occasion, there were ancient beings of humans of some sort that killed a family and ate them. So this is kind of the message that some people feel they don't want out there, but there definitely was cannibalism 800 years ago in that area.
Wow. That's cool. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, deep south.
Well, you know, that feels like home to me. But I think one of the most intriguing ghosts that I don't have to be as scared of is in Virgin Islands. There's a place called Annenberg Ruins.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be a lot of slavery there to work the sugar cane mills, and a lot of tragedies there with that involves when the Danes owned slaves. Well, anyway, they call them jumbies there in the Virgin Islands, which is a ghost. And there's apparently a female jumbie there. And if you're a male and you hike that trail at night, she will try to fatigue you until you fall asleep, and then she'll take advantage of you.
Oh no, that sounds awful.
Yeah. So that's one that us women don't have to worry about so much, but if you go there, Joshua, you might not go there at night, at least.
I'll pack on the chastity belt.
Right, there you go.
Okay, Eastern Mountains.
The Eastern Mountains, that's another favorite of mine. That's got your Blue Ridge Parkway, but also one park that's kind of a park that a lot of people don't know about so much is the Big South Fork, and that's where my family's from, that area there in Morgan County, Tennessee. The Big South Fork has got a ghost that used to own land there, but when the Park Service took over that land, he grieved over losing his farm. His name is Oscar Blevins. Well, after he died, rangers on more than one occasion would see an older man in overalls and a slouch hat, and he would be standing there by the Oscar Blevins farm, and they would see this man and speak to him, and then suddenly he would disappear. Rangers who don't normally scare easily would see this man and be very unsettled by the event.
Hmm. Wow. Okay, well, Northeast and Mid-Atlantic.
Well, you know, the Isle Royale is in that region, and that is one of my favorite parks that I have not been to yet. It's very hard to get to. It's in Lake Superior. It's very close to the Canadian border. But in my book, there's a very detailed story about the Wendigo, which is kind of like a vampire and a werewolf, where if the spirit bites you, you will turn into a Wendigo and become a cannibal and be consumed by this murderous drive to kill other humans and eat them. The really disturbing thing about this legend is it goes way back, at least as far back as 1600, is that there have been documented cases of whites and Indians succumbing to this, what some psychiatrists call Wendigo psychosis,
mm-hmm.
Where actually they have killed and murdered people to eat them.
Yeah, that's a weird one. I have a book coming out called Pet Ghost this summer, and mm-hmm. I was looking back at just kind of strange references to animal-like creatures, and so
right.
I started looking into the Wendigos, and I think Jack Fiddler was the name of one of the guys who was an old man, 80-something years old, not too long ago. I think it was the early 1900s, who actually was convicted of several murders, and he claimed that these people he killed on the reservation were indeed shape-shifting Wendigos.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good story.
Yeah, pretty wild stuff. Okay,
yeah.
Rocky Mountains.
Well, the Rocky Mountain, one of my favorite stories is because I'm a big fan of Isabella Bird. She wrote a book called A Lady's Life in the Rockies that a lot of people are familiar with. And she fell in love with a mountain man while she was visiting the Rocky Mountains. But, you know, they just weren't meant to be. And as she, when she moved back to England, and she was actually traveling in Switzerland at the time, she saw this man. He was called Rocky Mountain Jim. He appeared to her in Switzerland and then disappeared. And she found out later that very day he died from a gunshot wound. So even though the haunting didn't occur in the park, to me the park is the haunting place about their relationship.
Yeah, almost, maybe even some portal one could imagine to another
right.
place in time. Interesting. Okay, and then we have Canada and Alaska here.
Yeah, Canada has got some of the more remote areas that are really hard to get to, but one a lot of people know about is the hotel in Banff that is haunted by Sam the bellman, who just refuses to retire. You know, even death can't make him call in sick. Apparently he's still there helping guests at that hotel.
It's amazing how many of these hotels have ghosts, and some people say, oh, they're just looking for business. But and that may be, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But in my mind, I mean, hotels and resorts, bed and breakfast, they have so many people passing through them every year, including people who are there for special events, you know, weddings or some other type of ceremony, an anniversary perhaps, that it makes it seem like that this emotional energy that is being expounded may have some impact on the activity there. And so it's interesting to hear that seems to be consistent no matter where you go. And I guess lastly, in the table of contents here, we have the Pacific Northwest.
Well, that, you know, that is one creepy place, Joshua, and I did go to those parks while I was doing my research last summer, and I just had a blast. I love those parks, but there are just so many good stories up there, and of course, a lot of them, you know, surround Bigfoot. Bigfoot seen in Redwoods National Park, in Oregon Caves, and in Olympic, and in Crater Lake. So Bigfoot is definitely a big deal up there. And you can see, when you see that terrain and you see that lush vegetation, it seems like pretty easily that a creature could hide and not be found. I did have one person tell me that, he said, you know, everybody that works up there has their Bigfoot story, and they don't, you know, the Forest Service people and the Park Service people, and they don't necessarily talk about it to everybody. And that was one thing that was cool about me researching this book, is because I was a ranger, I think people were a little more open and brave, you know, to tell me what their experiences were.
Yeah, I'm sure that helped a lot. I mean, that extra credibility and experience is unparalleled. And that also is one thing that makes this book, Haunted Hikes, Spine-Tingling Tales and Trails from North America's National Parks, so special. It's time for us to take a break, but if you want to learn more in the meantime, hauntedhiker.com is Andrea Lankford's website. It's linked up through speakingofstrange.com. When we come back from the break, we will talk about more of these mysterious destinations and her research there. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Broadcasting live from Asheville, North Carolina, land of the sky, and into the cosmos. This is Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren talking with Andrea Lankford. Her new book is called Haunted Hikes, Spine-Tingling Tales and Trails from North America's National Parks. And there's a link to her website at speakingofstrange.com. And we were talking just a bit ago about Bigfoot, Andrea, and you know, one thing I have wondered about is whether or not, even though we supposedly have footprints and hairs, and when people see Bigfoot, they describe this creature as being fully physical, I wonder if Bigfoot could be some type of interdimensional being that sort of pops in and out of this realm and the next. From the people that you've interviewed, is there a consensus? I mean, do most of them think this is literally a big ape, or do some leave a little opening there for Bigfoot to be something of a more intangible nature?
You know, from the people I interviewed, which are park visitors and rangers, you know, rangers tend to be skeptical, but, you know, they think people maybe have seen a bear or an elk or something. But, you know, I get the feeling that they think it's an unidentified biological entity, something that's in these remote locations, a new species that just has not been discovered yet. But your theory is interesting because, you know, I don't know if you read the part about the skunk ape in Big Cypress down in the tip of Florida there. And he's very similar to Bigfoot. He just lives in another environment. It kind of makes you wonder if he's just popping around from place to place, and maybe that's partly why we can't find a forensic evidence.
Yeah, that could be. And, you know, and even in the South, you know, you have the lizard man, you've got all these swamp creatures, the Honey Island swamp creature and Fripp Island. I mean, all these places, and it's understandable that in some of these desolate swamp areas, it would be next to impossible to locate some of these things. And so, yeah, I'd like to think that, you know, there is something there. We'll get a dead body one of these days. But in the meantime, I would imagine that when you study not only cryptids like those, as well as haunted areas, you are getting sort of a good general slice of paranormal activity in general across this country. And from doing this book, Haunted Hikes, what have you learned about the overall status of paranormal activity? I mean, what is the paranormal, so to speak, in your mind?
Well, you know, I'm a ranger at heart, and so, you know, I'm always have the national parks in my mind and the scenery. So I think the thing that really stuck in my mind from researching this book is, you know, I was at, but publisher and I were both surprised at how much material I was able to find. I mean, the book is bigger than we thought it would be. And I had to stop. researching. There are more stories out there. This is the tip of the iceberg, just in national parks. And national parks, there's millions of visitors go to them, but there's also a lot of areas that aren't frequently visited. So the fact that there are so many stories in what, is considered to be remote locations, it sure surprised me a little bit, even though at the time when I started my book, I knew there'd be enough for a book. There was more than enough for one book.
And of all the places that you visited, what is, I guess, an outstanding place where something terrible happened? I mean, regardless of whether or not you expected to see a ghost, was there a place that you researched or visited that made you feel, this is just unsettling to me because of an incident that occurred here?
Oh, boy, there's several places like that, and probably the one that scares me the most is in Grand Canyon. There's a place that the Hopi call the Sipapu, the place of emergence. It's also what they consider to be the gateway to the underworld. And I did try to go to this place several years ago, and I was determined to visit this place. It said that if you visit there, especially if you're a woman, you could die, for one, and people have died going into that area. People have experienced lightning strikes. Friends of mine have got violently ill, vomited. Just bad stuff happens if you visit this place, if you gaze upon it. And it's a place that makes just about every Grand Canyon Ranger superstitious. Well, I tried to go to this place, and I went there fully intended to visit this place and take a picture of it, but as I got within a mile of it, I was getting stabbed in the eye by sticks. I was getting sucked down in the mud up to my knees, almost lost one of my sandals. I just got such a bad feeling, I turned around. I just decided this is just not worth it, whether it's real or not, I'm turning around. And I've never visited that place, and you know what, I never will visit it. It's okay with me that this place goes unseen. It's just too sacred, I think.
Is there anything, do you know why that women are not welcome there? Or?
Well, I'm not really sure for that. I think it's because to the Hopi, this place is very sacred, and they used to historically do pilgrimages to this place, and it mm-hmm. would be typically the young males, kind of a coming-of-age trip to go visit this place. And so it may stem from that somehow. This, of course, is how the rangers start to tell the story, is that women especially have trouble there. And I've talked to many women rangers who even have had to go there on body recoveries to retrieve people and have got very bad feelings about even being near that place and have asked to even be taken off of that mission because they also were so afraid of, just got bad vibes. I don't know how else to describe it, but that just very overwhelming bad sense. And I know of men who have gone there who, this wasn't a ranger, but it was an employee who visited that place and then just started having anxiety attacks after he had visited that place. Women who have fallen and broken their legs and would have died if the rangers had not been able to rescue them. It's just, I don't tell, in my book, I don't tell you how to get to that place because I just don't think people should go there.
You know, that's an interesting point because I would imagine when word spread around to some degree that you were putting together a book like this, people may have contacted you to say, oh, well, let me tell you of some place you should check out. This was out in the woods where, 5 years ago somebody was viciously murdered. Was there a degree of sensitivity that you used in terms of taking relatively recent incidents that have happened in these forests and not using them based upon the fact that there might be too much pain there for people who were attached to the event?
Well, I do have some recent murders, fairly recent. One is the Shenandoah murders of the two young women that occurred near the Appalachian Trail. I did struggle with things, even with the historic things. I struggled with writing about some of these things, as just mere entertainment. But I came to the point that, this wasn't mere entertainment to me, and I felt that their stories needed to be told. And I just felt that, the worst thing we can do to the dead is to forget them. And if there's these stories going out and these hauntings or these experiences, you know, it's a way to remember these people and remember their history. So I did struggle with that, but I tried my best to be sensitive, especially to the more recent events. But I think we need to know. It's our right to know that these things happened.
Yeah, that's a good point and a good way of looking at it. And I guess on a personal level, do you think it's possible that some aspect of a human may survive physical death?
I do think it's possible. I don't know. I don't have a firm belief. I do. I'm open-minded that that is possible, that there is something that remains after people leave.
Yeah. Well, now, in your book, Haunted Hikes, you've mentioned cryptids, you've mentioned ghosts, obviously, but what about UFOs? How did you approach the idea of incorporating those types of encounters into this book?
Well, I one of the most outstanding things to me, you know, is Mount Rainier is the site of you know, a historic, pivotal, you know, UFO moment in American history in 1947 when a pilot was flying above the mountains there and saw several disc-shaped objects skipping across the air, and a reporter described them as flying saucers, and that's basically how the term flying saucer was born. So there's a tie to UFOs in national parks that goes way back to 1947. You've also got some of the ancient drawings on rocks that have shapes and humanoid shapes that could lend you to think that they look like creatures from outer space or ships from outer space.
Yeah.
And a lot of UFO hotspots, Joshua Tree, Death Valley, in the Rocky Mountains, there's the Great Sand Dunes, a big UFO hotspot. And you talked earlier about Snippy, the horse that was entrails were missing, one of those cattle mutilation stories. That was just outside the boundary of Great Sand Dunes.
Hmm. Well, it's time for our last break of this interview, and when we get back, I'm going to ask Andrea about Joshua Tree one more time, since my name is Joshua. May as well see exactly what's happening there. She mentioned UFOs. Her book is called Haunted Hikes, Spine-Tingling Tales and Trails from North America's National Parks. You can find a link to her website, hauntedhiker.com, at... Advised to explain why the music is so cheesy coming back in. It's the MacGyver TV theme. Sorry, I hate it when hosts comment on their bumper music, but there you are, MacGyver fans. This is Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and I'm talking to Andrea Lankford. Her book is called Haunted Hikes, Spine-Tingling Tales and Trails from North America's National Parks. You'll find a link to hauntedhiker.com at speakingofstrange.com. So, Andrea, anything else at Joshua Tree you can tell us about?
Well, I'm happy to tell you that the park with a name like yours has one of the most famous ghosts of all, and that is Graham Parsons. You heard the Graham Parsons story yet?
No.
Well, he never became a full-blown rock star, but he was a country rock guy, and he's inspired a lot of, like Dwight Yoakam. He inspired Dwight Yoakam. And he was friends with a lot of people like the Rolling Stones. And he was from the South, but he just loved Joshua Tree so much. And he made a pact with Phil Kaufman, his roadie, that if one of them was to die, that they would bury, the other one would bury them, in Joshua Tree.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sure enough, he was staying in a hotel there just right outside the park and OD'd and died in a room there, room number 8 at the Joshua Tree Inn. And Kaufman, it's a long, funny story, but Kaufman stole his body and burned it at this place called Cap Rock, which is in the park, and it's an easy hike you can hike to the base of it, and there's a little shrine there for Graham Parsons. Well, his spirit has been seen there at Cap Rock, and also room number 8 is reported to be haunted by many people. I did stay in that room. There's a mirror there that was there when Graham Parsons died, and some people, there's a little log there where people write in their experiences, and people claim that that mirror will spin. So that, you know, Joshua Tree has a really good story associated with it.
I'm going to have to check that out. That sounds great. And unfortunately, we are out of time, but I have to tell you, Andrea, you have done an outstanding job of putting together a wonderful resource, and I'd like to hear from any of your readers who visit these locations and whether or not they have an experience, I guess. So, Andrea, please keep us updated on your work, and I thank you for being my guest tonight.
You bet. Thank you, Joshua.
Well, there you have it, Andrea Lankford. The book is called Haunted Hikes, Spine-Tingling Tales and Trails from North America's National Parks. It really is as good and comprehensive as I've made it out to be, and she has all kinds of maps. It's very digestible, so it's the kind of thing that I recommend you check out. And, hey, I want to wish a happy birthday to my father, Danny. Monday's the big day for him, and he already got his main present, a brand new snapper from Moores. And I'm not talking about a fish. So I wish the rest of you a good Memorial Day holiday. Remember how many have died and what they died for. For one thing, the freedom for me and you to speak here every Saturday night. And next week, remember all that data coming in from Mars last year? Well, what have we learned from it all? Is it realistic that advanced life once existed there and maybe still remains? Has NASA covered up significant information? Not surprisingly, a lot of people say absolutely, and that most of the public doesn't have a clue what all we have uncovered up there. One expert, Mac Tonnies, author of After the Martian Apocalypse, will join us with his views. So put that on your calendar. That and a lot more is next Saturday, 8 p.m., right here on News Radio 570 WWNC, the talk of the mountains. And before we wrap things up tonight, here's something that I found rather interesting I wanted to pass along to you. Have you ever heard of reverse evolution? This is pretty strange. One noted scientific journal editor has said he's discovered a genetic defect that seems to set back the clock on human evolution by more than a million years. Its victims walk on all fours and mouth a primitive language. The scientist reported, he added, the syndrome may literally undo eons of evolution and thus reflect with some accuracy what our ape-like ancestors were like. Went on to say, quote, the patients had a rather primitive language. They spoke to each other using their own language, using only a few hundred words. They were mentally retarded. They could not count from 1 to 10. They were not aware of time and space. For instance, they did not know where they live, which country, which village, which city. They were unaware of year, season, day, time. But they otherwise were pretty strong. Strong arms and legs. He also said their sitting posture was quite similar to an ape. Isn't that a little bit scary? To think that you and I might get some type of syndrome where we revert back to those cavemen. At least we know we would still like blondes, right? And we thank our wonderful webmaster, Robert McGee, as well as Brian Hall, Forrest Connor, Micah Hanks, John Anderson, Brian Irish, Dr. Al Prophet, and Mobius. This is Speaking of Strange, where the unusual becomes usual. You'll hear us again next Saturday, 8 p.m. And in the meantime, we'll be at speakingofstrange.com. And be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter at the site for the latest updates. Thanks for listening, and rest assured, when the amazing news happens, we'll keep you informed. speakingofstrange.com. This is the show where the unusual becomes usual, and we will be back.